Blog Talk Radio.
Brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ and seekers of the truth, this is the 396th edition of SDG Sola Dei Gloria, and it's part two of our SDG message on proof that a Jew isn't always a Jew. Remember, we started this last week out of Malachi chapter 1, verses 1 through 5. We took that rather bitter red pill, if you want to call it that, as we began to learn from God's word that a Jew isn't always a Jew. Remember, it all depends on what you mean when you say Jew. Are you talking about an ethnic Jew, which few are anymore? Or are you talking about a religious Jew, which is a matter of choice? Or are you talking about this racist, nationalistic, there I said it, nationalistic movement known as Zionism, which is out, and I don't think anybody could deny it, is out to establish the New World Order. They want to usher in this ungodly, I mean, I'm talking dastardly rule and reign of Satan's right-hand man. This is what the Bible talks about with regard to the Antichrist. And folks, I'm telling you, this is wrong and it's diabolical. Now, if you want more details on the actual biblical teaching of what I mean when I say a Jew's not always a Jew, go to Malachi chapter 1, verses 1 through 5, and read it for yourselves. And be sure to listen to SDG 395 for the background last week. And if you want even more, okay, Go back to SDG 365, the perpetual war, and it'll talk about the war between our flesh and spirit and Esau and Jacob. But this is just a continuation of the red pill moment. But before we do, I just want to recap a few things. Remember, last week we learned that the Edomites not only became Jews, okay, but they were the Herodians and many of the Pharisees. And we began that all in Malachi chapter 1. You know, that's where God said to his people Israel through the prophet Malachi, just look at history. This is God answering their cries and their complaints. He says, look how differently I've treated you. Jacob, compare him to Esau. I love Jacob and I hated Esau. You know, Esau was pretentious. Okay, and I reduced him to a molehill and turned his whole country into a ghost town. And, you know, Esau, he was hungry, you know. He was hungry, and what did he do? He sold his birthright for a pot of porridge. So take a look around and see how faithful I am to you, my people Israel. Okay? God's great. God's greater. Greater than all. This is God talking to his people through Malachi. Okay? And although God did curse Esau forever and all of his people, listen to what our prophet Ezekiel says in 25:14, and I'll lay my vengeance upon Edom by the hand of my people Israel, and they shall do in Edom according to mine anger and according to my fury, and they shall know my vengeance, saith the Lord God. He's talking about his people Israel here being judged through those whom he hated, Edom. And then listen to Joel 3:19, Egypt shall be a desolation and Edom shall be a desolate wilderness for the violence against the children of Judah, because they have shed innocent blood in their land. So he is cursing Egypt and he is cursing Edom, but he uses them. He uses them. And then God said he's going to use Edom to judge his chosen people. He comes right out and says it in 2 Chronicles. Listen to this. 2 Chronicles 28, verse 17. For again the Edomites had come and smitten Judah and carried away captives. And then God warns his people. He says to them, you know, they're going to continue to plot against you. Isaiah 63:1. Who is it that cometh from Edom with dyed garments from Bozrah? Now, these are the people who were grafted into the Pharisees, okay? This that is glorious in his apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength. Isn't that what the Pharisees did? I know. Folks, you read those stories and they were finely garbed. You know, they collected all sorts of tithes and split it three ways. They were wealthy. How could this be? Well, remember back in Malachi, God said in verse 4, chapter 1, whereas Edom saith, we are impoverished, but we will return and build the desolate places. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, that they shall build, but I will throw down, and they shall call them the border of wickedness, and the people against whom the Lord hath indignation forever. So like I said last week, there's a wicked web woven by the wicked, wicked hearts of man. And it ain't over yet. So are you ready to continue with this red pill? Are you ready to go back into the matrix and really see what's going on?
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill, the story ends, you wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
You know, folks, that's all it is, the truth and nothing more. But I want to always temper it with love, okay? So I was preparing this part two this week, and I started to realize there's a lot of information here. We might end up with a part three, but we have Resurrection Day coming up here. And I love sharing messages of the new life we have in Jesus Christ. So we might have to take a break on this. So I started to pull this together, and I thought, well, we better just do a quick review, okay? And remember, when you talk about this kind of stuff, you risk being labeled an anti-Semite. It's just the reality of the matter. So we need to understand and remember what anti-Semite means. And we start with the prefix, okay? Now, that prefix anti actually has two meanings. Most know that it means against or in opposition to. So when you say I'm an anti-something, you're against or in opposition to something. And in this case, Semites. But remember that prefix anti also means in place of. So just as the Antichrist, okay, who these quote-unquote Jews are trying to establish as the Christ, okay, the Antichrist will deceive many as he comes in place of the Christ. And then now remember what a Semite is. A Semite, okay, is a member of a number of people of ancient Southwest Asia, okay, including the Akkadians, the Phoenicians, the Hebrews, the Arabs, and the descendants of these people. It's a member of the modern people speaking a Semitic language. So it's a French-derived word from Noah's son Shem. And I guess in that sense I am an anti-Semite because I'm talking out against the Edomites, and they're a Semitic group, okay? So I'm coming against these false or fake Jews, the Edomites and the Canaanites, because remember, Esau married into a Canaanite family. These are false Jews who have usurped the title of God's chosen people. So today these anti-Jews have captured this world, okay, and this word, and it comes at the cost of the God's chosen people. But, you know, wait a minute. If a Jew's a subset of the greater whole under the term Semite, and these Edomites and Canaanites are calling themselves Jews, you see where I'm going here, folks? This anti means both against and in place of. So, folks, aren't these fake Jews really the anti-Semites? You see what I'm trying to say here? Oh, the web they weave with these words. So they're coming in place of the real chosen people. They're coming in place of God's Israel. They're coming in place of the people that we think they represent. They're usurpers, okay? But anyone who speaks out against them today is labeled an anti-Semite. Oh, what irony, isn't it? No, what they did here is they trapped this word in a syllogism. Right in the middle of their narrative, they changed the meaning of the word Jew. It's like the old, I can prove to you that a cat has 9 tails. And I've done that before, and it's a syllogism. So in the middle of the argument, you change the meaning of the word no cat, okay? And that's what they're doing here with this word Semite or anti-Semite. So let's be very clear here as we go into this red pill message. I'm talking now about Zionists, not your neighbor Bernie Leibowitz with his yarmulke going every Saturday faithfully to synagogue, okay? I am not talking about that person. I'm talking about this sick, sick political movement, okay, known as Zionism, which is a nationalistic, xenophobic political movement hell-bent on establishing the New World Order. That's what I'm talking about here, folks. So let's just make sure this is clear, because I am not against God's chosen people. I'm against these usurpers, these anti-Semites, in the sense of coming in place of, okay? Now, remember that quote by Voltaire we talked about last week. To find out who rules over you, simply find out who you cannot criticize. And that's exactly what's happening here. And I'm talking about the deep state, those behind the bureaucrats, these special interest groups, okay, who seize control of Western governments, including the United States, okay? It's an occupational government of sorts, okay, operating behind the scenes with no publicity. They don't want any. And they put these puppets, their front men and front women, okay, in positions of quote-unquote power. Now, some call this ZOG, okay, Z-O-G, but after the whole Patriot debacle back in the 90s, and you remember, you may not, but there was this tragedy called Randy Weaver, and there was a lot of bad press about the Patriot movement, and then there was the Oklahoma bombing in 1995 on March 19th, and by the way, I was deep into it with Michelle Moore and Bill Cooper at the time, and we were right on top of that. We have so much documentation to prove that the official national narrative is wrong. There were bombs in that building. Timothy McVeigh was not the sole perpetrator. Okay, I don't even know if he was involved for sure. But that term ZOG was under common use back then. Zionist occupation government. But then it got a really bad reputation. So when you hear ZOG now, if you've been at all in the truth movement, you almost naturally pull away from it because that's what they want you to do. But call it what you will. Okay, the special interest group is the organized Zionistic Edomite Jewish community. And what they're trying to do is bring upon us this new world order. Yeah, even trying to bring this topic up right now, you get a lot of scorn. Okay? And in some countries, you even go to prison. You're scorned by a population that's been brainwashed. Okay? They're brainwashed slaves. They blindly serve ZOG, if you want to use that word. Okay? Yet, like I told you last week, this group, these quote-unquote Jews, only make up 2% of the U.S. population. Yet they own a majority of big media. Okay? They're involved, if not in ownership positions, of a majority of banks, financial institutions. Remember Goldman Sachs? Back during the economic crisis of 2007-2008, Goldman Sachs. And they're involved in countless business associations, okay? Plus, they control the Federal Reserve and most central banks of the world. And the ones that they're not in control of, they want us to go to war with. This is sick, you know. But not only that, these Zionists, they hold many high-ranking corporate positions, okay, and top-level bureaucratic government positions. They do. As a matter of fact, did you know that a lot of our congressmen and congresswomen, both in the Senate and the House, in Israeli citizenships? You can just research this for yourself. Plus, a lot of the bureaucrats, the ones in the deep state government, they hold dual citizenship. But this was illegal until the 60s. Did you know that? If you want a list of the people and you don't have time to research it or whatever, just email me and I'll send it to you. kdbeer1961@gmail.com. So the question I have is, what's changed? Okay? Well, they get their nose under the tent, so to speak, like the camel, and look out. It's really sickening, folks. Plus, they control the wealthiest lobby in the U.S., AIPAC. Okay? So these quote-unquote anti-Jews, these anti-Semites, are in all sorts of key positions. Okay? Remember, they even overturned that racial quota that the U.S. had in place for centuries with the Immigration Act of 1965. And they just promote Marxist policies, forced immigration, minority welfare, affirmative action, sexual perversions, the porn. Remember, we covered that. Destruction of family values. They're behind all of this. And how do they do it? Well, the key here, and what we're going to focus on in this message, is this document called The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. It's the playbook for world domination. And now, today, the Jews, whatever you mean by Jew, they vehemently deny these protocols. You bring these up to the Jewish community, they'll start throwing sticks and stones at you. I'm not joking. They've got the world so brainwashed right now by believing that it's an anti-Semitic forgery. Yeah, they never give any real proof. But think about it for a minute, okay? What's this word forgery mean? Well, it only means that it's an unauthorized copy of some existing document. So that doesn't negate the content inside of it in any way whatsoever. It doesn't. Think about that for a minute. Okay, so it's a forgery. So someone, somewhere, this all together, someone had to forge it, had to make it, you know, put it together. They had to sit around and brainstorm. So call it what you may, okay? These protocols are a plan to weaken and destroy the world and its population. Now get this, folks. There's this ex-Air Force officer. His name's Tex Mars. You may have heard of him. He started a ministry many years ago, and it was instrumental back in my early days, along with Bill Cooper and many others, to help me wake up. This goes back to the 90s, late 80s. But anyways, this Tex Mars, he speaks out like I am right now, and he gets labeled. He gets labeled an anti-Semite on the internet for the protocols. Do your first search with Google, okay, and you won't find Tex Mars mentioned with this document until about page 11. I just did it the other day. Then use another search engine. I use DuckDuckGo, and he's on page 1. Just search it. Just search the protocols and then scroll down and look until you see Tex Mars. He'll come up on page 1 of DuckDuckGo, but he won't show up until page 11 of Google. Now, why do you think that is? Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to let you figure it out. And then check this out if you get a chance, okay? Liberty to the Captives, okay? And then just search on their page, Protocols of the Elder Zion Forgery. Okay, so here's a really good Christian website, and they even get it wrong. They're out killing the messenger. They slam it to Tex Mars. So I'm telling you, people have been brainwashed. They've been conditioned. And what I want to do here is just share some facts with you, okay? Dive into the history of the protocols. I don't even know if we're going to have time to get to the actual protocols. That's why I said we may need a part 3. So there's this document known as the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. And I'm telling you, it's controversial. You bring this up, and people will get angry at you for a bunch of words on paper. And the sad thing is, not a single one of these words is saying anything derogatory about the Jews. Okay? I'm telling you, it's literally a blueprint for world domination by a secret society. And the second publication out by those that were trying to get it out was called World Conquest Through World Government back in 1922. And this document, it just oozes with contempt for those it's targeted to enslave, its victims, okay? And it has this profound, even supernatural understanding of the human soul. And maybe if we have time, a little more on that later, okay? Plus, I'm telling you, it's extremely graphic, detailing exactly how it's going to use the complacency of what they call the goyim, okay, the cattle, the masses, to dominate the world's population, to enslave the vast majority of people, okay? I'm telling you, folks, everyone should read this. Yet it's been so demonized and so denigrated that people are afraid to even have a copy of it. But I'm telling you, there's no other document that provides us with such a concise and clear understanding of why the world's progressively moving towards a one-world government. You know, it's as Ralph Epperson said, as if some unseen hand, some unseen hidden hand, okay, is moving it all along. And by the way, that was another interview that my good old friend John Seitzinger, Deep Sixth, we had an interview with none other than Ralph Epperson, and John dumps the interview. This was a pivotal man in my early education, and John went to one of his seminars, and Johnny, why did you dump all these? I used to refer people to these things. They're gone. You know how much time we put into that? So these protocols, I don't want to get off on John, okay? These protocols, they give us these clear insights into what's going on in politics. From a local level all the way up to geopolitical issues on a worldwide level, okay? And what's happening is it continues to work against the masses time after time after time. And when you never see anything go in favor of the masses but always against it, it must be a conspiracy. Gary Allen wrote a book on that, and that's how he opened it. He said if you were just doing things happenstance, half the times it would benefit the people and half the times it would hurt the people. On a statistical average, you know, that's what Gary Allen was saying. But it's always against the people in the favor of the special interests, the bankers, the industry, big industry, you know, big pharma, you know, big oil, big coal, the powers that be, the proverbial they, you know, the unseen hand, as Epperson used to call it. Now, people get outraged, okay? And there's venom in their eyes if you suggest to them there's a conspiracy as deep as what's outlined in the protocols. Think about it. If you've ever done it, you can just see it. It's people's normal response to the first time they see truth. But then think about the average Joe Sixpack or Susie Soup, as I like to call them, okay? They have absolutely no grounded, relevant information to formulate or base their opinion upon, yet they have an opinion. That's the danger of democracy, too, folks, because most people's opinions were formed by the last person they heard talk. So these Joe Sixpacks and Susie Soups, what do they do? Is they react to any claim about an ancient conspiracy through mere programming, just like Pavlov did with the dogs, okay? And this was all created through propaganda by the mainstream media. So most who know what's going on, people like you and me, we rarely speak about this stuff in public, okay? Because you just, every time you do, you just get, you get ire, you get anger, you get people all over you, and sometimes you just don't want to do it. Like I said, with these biased Google searches, it's getting harder and harder to find this information about this ancient conspiracy. And you know what's crazy, folks? I have a lot of this stuff in print. I have a huge library, and that was all inspired by Bill Cooper and some stuff he used to say. In fact, one thing he said was, there's going to come a time when you're not going to find these documents anymore. And he was referring primarily to the printed word. But then I started seeing it all uploaded on the internet. I said to myself, oh, that'll never happen. I don't have to keep all these documents. And now it's starting to disappear on the internet, or at least become impossible to find. And then go back and try to find the documents, the printed documents, they're disappearing. So this is a mass censorship, both on the print level and also on the electronic level. And people are being brainwashed since birth to see any suggestion of a conspiracy as ridiculous. So each generation is born into a world of greater and greater censorship and illusion. Wizardry, as Owen calls it. So let's just get into a little bit of the history of the protocols. And it's very complex. And as I was putting this information together this week, I started thinking, you know what? I should give the other side of the story. So this is some of the information suggesting that this is real and relevant. And then I think I also ought to give the argument against it, why they call it a forgery. And it's almost laughable when you see their argument, because although it's potentially true what they're saying, it doesn't negate the power of the document and the fact that it's actually happening. So there's a lot more detail. There's a book out called Waters Flowing Eastward by L. Fry. And you get a lot more detail than I'm going to give you, because I just can't go through all this in 60 minutes here. But back in 1884, this Justine Glinka, she was the daughter of a Russian general. She was in Paris, and she got some secret political information that was being communicated back to Russia. She was employed, a Jewish assistant named Joseph Schorst. And he was a member of this Mizram Lodge in Paris. And Schorst offered to get her a document that he said was of great importance and would be pivotal to Russia's security. And she paid him 2,500 francs for it. And then what she did is she sent this French original with a translation she did in Russia back to the Tsar in St. Petersburg. Okay? But as the story goes, it was suppressed by some that were under wealthy Jewish control. Sound familiar to what's happening in Washington? So bottom line, the Tsar never got it. And then for some reason, Glinka was banished to her estate. She was persona non grata after this, okay? And then she gave a copy to this guy named Alex, and he showed it to two of his friends, Stepanov, and you've probably heard of this one if you've read any of it, Sergius Nilus. Now, Stepanov had it printed privately, and he circulated it amongst friends. But what Nilus did is, in 1901, he put it into a book he wrote called The Great Within the Small. Now it's out, okay? And then about that same time, A friend of Nilis, this guy named Bootme, he brought a copy back to England, and supposedly he gave it to the British Museum, but researchers have not been able to confirm this, okay? The museum denies ever receiving a copy of the protocols. Now, let's go back to my days with Cooper. Cooper claims he was over there, and he saw this, along with the letter that Mazzini supposedly wrote to the Freemason, who wrote Morals and Dogma, Albert Pike. It's all pretty interesting, isn't it? So here's Cooper saying, I actually saw that document in the museum in Britain. And his story checks out. If you look at when he says he was over there, he was actually over there giving a talk on conspiracy. And he did, in fact, make a visit to the museum. So his story checks out, folks. But like I'm saying, these documents are disappearing. So as this was all happening, Jewish members of the Russian police, okay, get a hold of some minutes from what's called the Basile Conference back in 1897. And supposedly the information covered at this Congress matches the information that was in the protocols. And then let's wind the clock ahead to 1917. Nilis hasn't given up. You know, he's still trying to get the word out. He comes out with his second edition, revised and documented, and he publishes. But before he could get it to market, after he published it, what do we have going on? We have the Bolshevik Revolution of March 1917. And a lot of his work gets destroyed. Now, 1924, Nilis was arrested in Kiev, okay, imprisoned. He was tortured. And there was a Jew that was ahead of the court. Now, this is during all this stuff going on with the Bolsheviks. There was a Jew at the head of the court, okay, that he was being treated this way because having done incalculable harm in publishing the protocols. And then a few months later, they let him go. But he was led before these secret police again, this time in Moscow. Then he was freed in 26 and died in exile, okay, in 29. So here's a guy that was just printing some books, okay, and his life was destroyed. But some of his second edition copies, they got to Germany, England, France, and even the United States. And various publishing companies, even Japan. Japan had copies. Okay? So they were gaining widespread international recognition after they were published into English in 1920. And they became notorious. So big papers like the Times and the Morning Post, and I put the article out of the New York Times. It's in the banner, okay? They started to try to denigrate this. They tried to do their damage control on this document, because it was gaining some traction. And isn't that what's happening today with the demonetization of people like Owen Benjamin when he's speaking truth, and that Vox Day that he talks to a lot? You know, Vox Day's reading history on YouTube, and he gets banished from YouTube, calls whatever you were, a Jewish plot or just a plot. Whatever they are, the people, the educated people back in the 20s, 1920s, knew that there was something to all of this. Okay, so there could be a debate whether it was Zionists or not, whether it was Jews or not. But nobody would deny the potency of the material in terms of the fact that it was matching exactly, almost word for word, what was happening in the culture. Listen to this word from Douglas Reed in a book he wrote called The Controversy of Zion. Probably so much money and energy were never before in history expended on the effort to suppress a single document. He's talking here about suppressing the protocols. The period of the 1920s marks the end of the time when the Jewish question could be impartially, openly discussed in public. And like I said, you try to talk about this today and you're labeled an anti-Semite. Oh, and by the way, folks, did you know that 6 million number that's always associated with the Holocaust? And believe me, folks, horrible things happened, and I'm not denying that. But did you know that 600, the 6 million number is almost a magic number of sorts? 6 million. You could do a message on that. You know, they've been bantying that number around since the 1800s. So bottom line today, a lot of people call this document, the protocols, a fraud. But the fact remains there's no conclusive proof that it is a fraud, as they say it is. But these allegations of forgery, they've just followed this along ever since. And this is what got me thinking I ought to share their side of the story too, okay? So despite that a lot of people call it a fraud, you can't deny that a lot of the stuff that's happening is right out of that book. So call it today the protocols of the neocons, okay? And boy, the neocons, that's another story. If you trace their lineage, they go back to Marxists, their parents and grandparents. And then if you trace them, a lot of them are Zionists, the neocons. Isn't it funny, that web that we weave, okay? But the fact remains, folks, I'm just telling you, this publication has marked world events as they unfold exactly to the T. Henry Ford, okay, he's been disparaged time and time again over this, okay? But he was interviewed, and the interview was published in New York World in February of 1921 on the 17th, okay? And this is how he discussed the protocols when he was asked about it. You know, there's a time he was actually putting them in his Model T's and his Model A's. Each glove box had a copy. Here's what he said. The only statement I care to make about the protocols is that they fit in with what is going on. They are 16 years old, and they have fitted the world situation up to this time. They fit it. Can't argue with what this man said. And remember, this man was brilliant. Henry Ford was brilliant. So call it what you may. Argue about the finer points of its origin. You cannot deny its content. And I'm looking at the clock here, folks. There's no way I'm going to be able to get into the content. Okay? So maybe the good way to wrap this up this week would just be to talk a little bit more about the history, lay some foundation for the Talmud, and then next message on this, get into the actual content of the protocols and what I mean by the Talmud and why it's such a controversial document that's even much older than the protocols. Okay? So all the things that are in this document are now being facilitated by this move for a one-world government. It's a gradual movement as nations are usurped for this non-governmental organization, and power is shifted from the representative of the various nations to these appointed officials that are in groups like NATO and UNESCO and, of course, the UN, okay? And let's not forget about some of this garbage that President Trump's trying to reverse, like NAFTA, okay? And challenging the European Union to carry more of their own weight, okay? But all of this stuff is unfolding exactly as it's outlined in the protocols. The quote-unquote Jews have symbolically returned to Palestine. The state in Israel now exists. And it's the official homeland of all Jews, despite the fact that a majority of Jews have no racial connection to Israel whatsoever. And a lot of them are atheists. So out of our three possibilities of what you might mean when you say Jew, religious, ethnic, or political, that means that most of the people there are political Jews, Zionists, with no ethnic or religious connection to God's chosen people. Folks, I believe that rather than this being a plan of Jewish leaders to control the world, as so many people say, I believe this document's really the grand plan to create one world government, okay? The one world economy and the one world satanic religion known as the New World Order. That's why I'm covering this in an SDG message. And I think the reason it was written with this thin veneer of a Jewish conspiracy was to conquer the world through subterfuge, because then people wouldn't touch it, so they could get ready for their Antichrist, their Messiah. And they wanted to make certain that this document was out thoroughly discredited and forgotten because I think they knew that somebody would leak it. People have a conscience, and somebody's conscience was going to prick them and say, I got to get this out to the world. So I think this was all done as a plan. So many tried to spend so much over so many years to discredit the protocols, the grand plan, if as I call it, a blueprint for global government, okay? And I think it's a satanic document. Remember I told you there was almost a supernatural understanding of the human soul? I can't find another document in world history that systematically lists all the steps necessary to establish a new world order, to enthrone its ultimate leader, the Antichrist. So I believe there's some sort of satanic connection to this. Maybe it was through automatic writing or, you know, guiding spirits. There's a lot of that stuff going on back then. The spiritism movement was very big. But the question remains, why? Why do all this? Well, there's an old quote that goes so well. Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So these fake Jews denying logos continue playing this game, okay, of subterfuge, okay, being the victim, the perennial victim, okay, never admitting to their own crimes and crying anti-Semite anytime you try to expose some of this. There's a cultural hatred there, okay, and I think it goes way back to the time of the Babylonians, okay, I really do. And that's where the Talmudic tie-in happens. Michael Hoffman III wrote a big volume on it. I have a copy of it. And I just forgot this guy that Ethan gave me, Michael Jones. He's a professor. And it's funny, but I was putting a lot of this information together. You know, Sister Kathy sent me this Owen Benjamin guy probably over a month ago now. Listened to some of his stuff. I'm putting this Red Pill series together. I find some information. I actually quoted Jones last week, and I watched one of his videos. This man is very educated and important to listen to if you want to understand this. And there is a Talmudic connection. So this rabbit hole, okay, this red pill moment, it's deep, folks. And trying to cover this in 60 minutes on an SDG message, it's very challenging. So there's a lot more to this, and I want to get into it in message number 3 or part 3. But remember, we have the resurrection coming up. And that the resurrection celebration, which most people call Easter Sunday, is so important because we're walking in the resurrection life of Christ. So what I'd like to do is share a resurrection message with you next week. Get into this. Folks, I love y'all. And remember, we're doing this because Jesus told us, what did he tell us? That we're to be as wise as serpents, but as gentle as lambs. So go out this week and just start to think about some of this stuff and ask the Holy Spirit to shed the light of truth on it. And while you do that, just remember that we're surrendering to Jesus. I love y'all. I'll be back next week, provided the Lord's willing. We're still here.